Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to explore the real world of sales with our real sales expert, Ashley V. And before you say anything, Ashley, I have to say something. I've wanted to say this for years. Okay. It's Shark Week here at OC Talk Radio.
Yay! Yeah, absolutely. I love sharks, so I didn't know you like sharks too, Paul. That's awesome.
I have two grandsons. One's three, one's nine. First, the nine-year-old, dinosaurs and sharks. And I thought your guest said something interesting. Dinosaurs were, like, really cool. Now sharks are the new dinosaurs. He's got a million sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Now his younger brother is picking that up. And just he doesn't know any other fish in the world, but he knows a shark.
Oh, that's
maybe
so
a whale.
Cute.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So sharks are definitely important, and they're getting real popular now more than ever. And we have an amazing guest today. We have Dr. Chris Lowe. He's a expert in sharks. He runs the Shark Lab at Cal State Long Beach, and he's a professor of marine biology. So thank you for being here today.
Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Did you swim over here? No, right. Before Ashley jumps in, I just have to say, why does Cal State Long Beach, what were we talking about, have a shark lab? You're not on the water, I don't think, but I guess you're near the water. But I would think there's other universities up in Monterey or other places that I would think of first.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of an interesting, there's an interesting history there. So back in 1966, Cal State Long Beach started a marine biology degree program because there wasn't one in California. And one of the professors they hired was a guy named Don Nelson, who was a pioneer in studying shark behavior. Hmm. So he came in 66 and had grad students and was funded by the Navy to try to develop shark repellents. And in those days, the problem was we didn't understand how sharks perceive their world. So Don, much of his early work was focused on how sharks sense their environment. And he found that they use hearing in order to detect things in their world. Mm-hmm. So he was curious about how they orient to things in the environment. And basically one of the challenges he always found was in trying to study sharks, he was an avid diver and a world-class spear fisherman. So he was in the water all the time, and he was very frustrated in that he could never be in the water long enough to see what sharks were doing. So he helped develop a technology that is now used globally called acoustic telemetry. And we now use that to track sharks.
Oh, okay. I see. Was there like a shark problem that made them to create the Shark Lab also?
Well, it wasn't really a shark problem per se. Globally, people were being bitten by sharks. And during World War II, there were a lot of sailors and aviators that went into the ocean that were bitten by sharks. And that was a big fear. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Navy actually got a group of scientists together, and Dr. Nelson's advisor, PhD advisor, was one of those people. And they said, look, we have to come up with a way to protect people from sharks. And at that time, those biologists they weren't shark biologists back then. They were just regular old ichthyologists, people that studied fish.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I got to throw in one thing here. I'm gonna show off my one knowledge of World War II history. My dad was a World War II vet. I've studied history. I'm a big World War II the Indianapolis, the ship that went down.
Yeah, I saw like a
movie
on it.
They were carrying parts of the atomic bomb, so they couldn't. It was like a secret mission or something. Maybe they were carrying a bomb. Whatever they were carrying, it was like a secret mission. Went down, sunk by a sub, and nobody went to get them for a long time, and a lot of them got eaten by sharks.
Sushi.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, there's some really interesting stories about that, and I've been working with a naval historian in that probably the number of sailors bitten or consumed by sharks was overestimated. Nonetheless, when you put that many injured people into the ocean, those things are going to happen. So it's probably one of our most recognized accounts of mass mortality as a result of shark bites in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. So what caused that then?
Well, you've got a lot of people that were hurt and bleeding in the water.
Yeah.
Okay.
And those oceanic sharks are always, they live in an environment that's kind of like a desert. So they're constantly looking for food.
How far can they smell blood?
So that's one of the things that Dr. Nelson and his fellow grad students were looking at. And it's been estimated based on the number of molecules in the water that they have very high sensitivity. So, for example, with the current going down current, you could probably carry an odor that they would be able to detect maybe up to half a mile away.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. It's like crazy smell right there.
Oh, and do they really smell it? How can you smell? Because there's water. I can't picture smelling underwater. Is it some other sensory organ, or is it really their nose?
No, it's a nose. It's a nose. It's different than our nose, of course. It's got lots of receptors. And, of course, you know, they move back and forth through the water, and their nostrils are separated. So they can actually tell the difference in the concentration of the molecules from one side of the head to the other, which is amazing. And of course, you know, what they're detecting in the water are things like amino acids, which are components of blood and other things. So it's just like walking down the street and smelling a bakery and going, oh, I smell fresh bread. It smells great. And that scent you've now associated with food, and it tends to make you hungry. So you actually seek out the bakery.
So do sharks like to eat people then? Or is it like they just
Is that on
trying
your preferred list here?
So actually, no.
The delicacy?
People being consumed is extremely rare. It's
really?
Bites alone are rare. But people being consumed or parts being consumed is even rarer. So the thing that is interesting is typically when we see that sort of thing occurring is when more than one shark is involved. So if more than one shark is involved in a bite, it's almost like competition. Imagine putting a plate out of brownies and there's only one brownie left and a bunch of kids come into the room. Mm-hmm. They're going to fight over that last brownie.
Right.
Imagine that was a vegan brownie, not one filled with rich butter. You know, they'll still fight over that brownie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we think in many cases the reason why people are actually bitten and flesh is removed is because of competition.
So there's like multiple sharks like circling like a surfer or swimmer in the ocean fighting for them.
Yeah, that could be the situation. Mostly what we see, and we've documented this for the very first time, that sharks are swimming by people. White sharks are swimming by people.
Oh my gosh.
Every single day as we sit here, there's a white shark swimming right underneath a swimmer or surfer. They don't even know the shark is there, and the shark just doesn't care.
Oh, really? So they're not targeting the people then?
Absolutely not. In fact, we've found that people are akin to flotsam at the beach. There are these things that float around on the surface and splash around, but pose no threat to the shark and clearly aren't a food source. Mm-hmm. And from our drone data, you know, all the video footage, hundreds of hours of video footage of sharks and people, they just ignore us.
Really? That's interesting because, you know, a lot of people get scared to go into the water, the ocean, because they're afraid of getting attacked by a great white shark. You know, you see the movies, you see the shows. It looks terrifying, gruesome. So you're saying that it is pretty safe then to swim and surf in the ocean?
I've been doing it my entire life, and I'm still here. Millions and millions of people are doing it every day, and they're in and around sharks. They just don't know it. And clearly what this indicates is that sharks just don't care. They do not consider people food.
Somebody tweeted in and wants to know if it's true that when sharks do bite people like surfers, they think it's a seal. When they look from below, they think it's a seal, because seals they do eat. Yeah.
You know, that's kind of one of the favorite hypotheses that many people have, is that one of the reasons that explains why a shark would bite a person unprovoked is that they mistake us for their natural food. And for big sharks like tiger sharks, white sharks, and bull sharks, they eat big things, and marine mammals are one of those big things. What if people look enough like their prey that they make a mistake?
Right.
Now the one thing I like to say about that is, if you look at the rate of shark bites, considering how many millions of people are in the water between Hawaii, California, Australia, South Africa, New England, and there are sharks all around them all the time, that sharks don't make mistakes very often.
Yeah.
In fact, people make mistakes far more often than sharks ever do. So I'm putting a sales pitch in for sharks here today.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah. I know, I think that's good to hear your side of it, because you know a lot more, obviously, than most people about sharks. And I think, I think a lot of people have the media in the movies that also make the shark look so evil and horrible. And they get more scared. But is there anything like, if you are, let's say, swimming in the ocean and then a shark approaches you, defend yourself?
So first of all, if you're in the ocean, you see a shark, that's really cool. I mean, you just get to see something truly amazing. Their whole MO is sneaking up on things. So quite often, I always tell people, look, if you've been in the ocean off Southern California for the last 20 years, I guarantee a white shark swam by you and you didn't even know it. And that's because they don't want to be seen. Mm-hmm. But if they do want to be seen and you actually see one in front of you, what we always tell people is face the shark. Look at the shark. Let the shark know you see it. If the shark's moving around you, move with it. Always let the shark know you're watching it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So for most predators, you know, their whole thing is sneak up. That's the safest place to be if you want to investigate something or even try to tackle it. But sure. If the thing is always facing you, you run the risk of getting injured. So that's why we always tell people, look, face the shark, let it know you see it. You know, if you're on a surfboard, turn your surfboard towards the shark. It might look at that silhouette and think it's whatever that is, it's looking at me.
Scare it off.
Well, it may not scare it off, but it just knows it's being watched.
Okay. So it's like you're watching it back, facing it, not being afraid. So they can sense like fear then.
Well, we don't know about that. We don't know if they can truly sense fear.
Like dogs do.
Yeah, we're not sure about that. What we do know, what we have learned about them, is that they're actually fairly intelligent animals and they learn very quickly. So they learn much like we do. You have good experiences and you have bad experiences.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So from a bad experience, they may learn that something is not edible or something isn't worth trying to tackle.
Well, yeah, that leg didn't taste too good the other day.
Or the taste of neoprene, or maybe people just taste bad. Either way, we do know they learn very quickly. When things are good, you know, so for example, if they find, there's somebody fishing and they're throwing their bait over the side, their old bait, or a commercial fisherman's throwing his old bait over the side, they'll take advantage of that. In fact, we know that they can even detect people's boat engines and will go to the boats when they hear certain engines because they know they're going to get fed.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know they were that smart. Wow. That's interesting. Okay. Cool. So then you have to kind of like read the shark's behavior and kind of like understand them to be able to like survive and not get like bit or something if you see. What about like punching in the nose or the eye? Like I've heard that helps too.
Sure. And those are kind of last resorts, right? So if a shark's getting a little too close and you feel like it's going to try to bite you, you want to whack it in the nose. That's a sensitive area. So we already talked about how good their sense of smell is. They're literally a swimming nose. A third of their brain is dedicated to just interpreting the odors they detect in the water.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a very sensitive part of the body. The eyes are also sensitive.
And so you shouldn't if you have a cut, even if it's a small cut, you shouldn't go swimming in the ocean.
That will have no effect at all. I mean, think about how many people are swimming on Southern California beaches. Little kids with skinned up knees and elbows.
Yeah.
You know, that is nothing. That absolutely has no interest or appeal to those animals.
That's interesting.
So when people say, if you're bleeding, you shouldn't go in the water. They talk about women on their period. It's not safe. None of that has been shown to be true.
Wow. Interesting. Okay.
Here's another question that came in. The one I've heard this one a lot. Does a shark have to keep moving? Or does it die?
Yeah,
so to force water through its gills, right?
Yeah. So there's quite a few species of sharks that don't have to swim. They can rest in the bottom, and as long as they open and close their mouths, they can pump enough water across their gills in order to breathe. But there are some sharks that have to continuously swim in order to breathe. So they're what we call ram ventilators. They open their mouth, and the faster they swim, the more water goes across their gills, the more oxygen they can extract. So those sharks continuously swim.
Is that like a gray white? Are they like that?
Yeah. So white sharks and mako sharks and thresher sharks and hammerheads, all of those species have to be moving in order to breathe.
Okay. I see. And that's interesting. You guys are tracking them at the shark lab. So what kind of research have you guys discovered about the sharks, the gray whites?
Yeah. So what our interest is, you know, about 10 years ago, we noticed that juvenile white sharks started showing up at public beaches and it freaked everybody out. So you saw in the news, there's 20 white sharks off Belmont Shore. This is in Long Beach Harbor, right?
I know. Crazy. So random.
So when we went down, and of course, we used this technology that Don Nelson helped develop, And we were tagging sharks with these acoustic transmitters. And think of it like a spy technology. The sharks, we can tag them with a tag.
How do you put that on the shark?
So we dart this into the back. Think of that like an earring that goes in the shark. And it hangs off the shark. And that sound transmits through the water very well.
Okay.
Now, the sound the sharks can't hear. So it's like this underwater silent beacon that our technology can detect.
Okay.
So our underwater receivers are constantly listening for a tagged shark. And when it gets within about 300 yards of a receiver, the receiver logs the time, the date, and the ID number of the tag. So by having these all along the beaches, we can track their movements. So the question is, why are sharks picking certain beaches?
Yeah.
What are they doing? How long are they going to be there? Are they eating things there? What are they eating? And then what the lifeguards want to know is, when are they going to leave?
Right.
So by using this technology, we've been kind of spying on these sharks, and we've tagged almost 300 white sharks.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. And those are all in California?
All in Southern California, actually.
Wow.
And then
I
tracking
know there's that
the
many.
Movements. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, and numbers are going up. And, and that...
Why is that?
Well, we think it's because of protections. So white sharks were protected in the state of California in 1994. So it was illegal for a fisherman to catch them and kill them. Prior to 1994, white sharks were being caught in commercial fisheries. And chances are if you ate fish tacos in California in the early 90s, you probably ate white shark and you didn't even know it.
Really? Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. That's a like creepy thought in a way.
But it
tastes good, I guess. Yeah.
It does. But they're protected. So, so it's illegal to go out and target them. In addition, we also banned the use of gill nets, which was a popular fishing method in California, in nearshore waters. In other words, it was illegal to fish with that kind of net from the shoreline out to 3 miles. And it turns out those gill nets were catching and killing a lot of baby white sharks. So since that, we've seen kind of a big uptick in the number of sharks. So we're not killing them anymore, which is one of the things that has allowed the population to come back. But more importantly, their food sources come back. So adult white sharks' favorite things to eat are marine mammals. And you got to understand, marine mammals.
Like seals, otters, and stuff.
Exactly. They were hunted to the verge of extinction by the early 1900s off the coast of California and throughout the Pacific. But they were protected in the 70s. And since then, marine mammal populations, seal and sea lion populations have recovered better than we could have ever imagined.
Okay. Nice. Sounds good.
So now the adult food sources come back. So that's why we think there are more white sharks.
Okay. And do the white sharks like stay around here or do they swim like other places come back?
So using another technology called satellite telemetry, we can tag shark with a tag that will then transmit when the shark is at the surface. And based on that, we tagged probably 30 sharks with these satellite tags. And we found that the babies during the winter would migrate down to Mexico, down to Baja, would overwinter there. And then the following spring come back to Southern California. So it turns out a baby white shark that's less than a few weeks old, by the time November rolls around and the water temperature starts dipping below 60, too cold, they would migrate down to Baja.
Okay,
I see. And the following spring come back. So we're talking about probably...
A little vacation there.
Yeah, a little winter vacation. That's about a 3,000-mile round trip.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, and they swim the whole way.
They swim the whole way.
Wow.
By the time they're 3 or 4 years old, they know where the offshore islands are. And they're making probably 5 or 6,000 mile annual migrations.
Wow. So are there more sharks here than anywhere else in the world?
I would say California's white shark population is pretty healthy right now.
Okay.
In other locations, we're seeing numbers go up, like in
where?
The Atlantic, like off Cape Cod in New England. We're actually seeing sharks in off Nova Scotia. We know that they've been there before, but that part of the ocean is getting warmer. Just like it is off California.
Okay.
And we're seeing even white shark nurseries further north than we've ever seen them before.
Really? Wow. What about like Florida, Hawaii, South Africa?
Yep. So white sharks that they've tagged in New England actually will migrate all the way down to Florida in the winter or go inside the Gulf of Mexico and then turn around and go all the way back to New England.
So they swim all the way out here from the East Coast?
No. So they're using the Gulf of Mexico. So the Atlantic population.
My geography was bad.
Nope. The Atlantic population actually ranges along the entire Western Atlantic.
Okay.
And the Pacific population has a Western population and a Northeastern population. So what's really interesting is that genetically, those are discrete populations. They don't mix, even though they're capable of traveling thousands of miles.
Okay, interesting.
We don't see them interbreeding, okay, which is very interesting.
And even though they're all the same kind of like great white shark.
Yep.
Only there's only one, right?
Yeah, only one species. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay, and then what, so like what are the benefits of sharks? Like I've read some articles like they can have like, I don't know, their fins or something, can heal cancer or different things, or I don't know, they're really healthy and, you know, people eat shark soup and stuff. Like, is there anything happening there that you guys research or?
Well, there's been a lot of claims, but not a lot of data. Okay. So in the early days, you know, people thought that sharks got had low rates of cancers. And it turns out that that probably isn't true. They do get cancers and they do get various diseases. When a shark gets sick, they sink. So the problem is we rarely get to see what sick sharks look like, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that wash up on the beach, that strand, they give us some indication of what kind of diseases they can get. So the old the old thoughts that, you know, eating shark fin soup will increase your virility isn't true.
Okay.
In fact, it probably decreases your sperm count because their mercury levels are so high.
Oh my gosh. And that's, so the pollution does affect the seafood a lot, the sharks, the fish.
They do accumulate a lot of contaminants. So whether it's mercury, whether it's organic contaminants like DDTs and PCBs, they do accumulate a lot of that. And that's another reason why people shouldn't eat too much of the meat. But what's really interesting is that they don't seem to be as susceptible to those contaminants as other animals. And I think that's where sharks are unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you got to remember, we've got a critter that's been swimming around for 400 million years.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy to think about.
It's a champion, right? It's the ultimate resilient animal on the planet. And it survived probably five mass extinctions. And it's still around, very similar to the way it looked 400 million years ago. So when we look at their physiology and their immune systems, they're different than many of the other vertebrates. So there's something special about them, and it's probably given them that evolutionary resilience.
Wow, that's neat. Yeah, I mean, they seem like invincible. When you even look at it and you think about it, it's like they're so tough, you know. Their skin, their teeth are terrifying. How big is a shark tooth for a great white?
So it depends on the size, right? So the cool thing about sharks is their entire skeleton is made out of cartilage, which means their teeth fall out. So your teeth are socketed in bone. You bite into an apple. Hopefully your teeth don't fall out, right?
Yeah, so far so good.
But a shark's jaw is made out of cartilage. So it's soft and flexible. And that means every time they bite into something, their teeth fall out. Well, the cool thing about sharks is they constantly are producing new teeth behind their gum, and then an entire new row comes into place about every month. So the front row just falls out.
I didn't know that. Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
So what that means is as they get bigger, their teeth can get bigger, or they can change shape so that they can feed on different things.
Oh my gosh. Okay. They're never going to lose their teeth. So you...
They never have to go to the dentist. There's no dentistry required for sharks.
Two quick questions, and then we'll let you go. How did you get into this? Why were you attracted to studying sharks?
Yeah, so I actually grew up on Martha's Vineyard. My mom's family were whalers and commercial fishermen, and I grew up playing in the water off the vineyard. I don't remember learning how to swim or fish, but I do remember one day catching a shark, and I didn't know what it was. I was a horrible student. And I actually went to the library to look it up. And I figured out it was a dogfish. And I found a book on sharks. And that was it for me.
Nice, nice. Wow, that's amazing. And you're such a shark guru, Dr. Lowe. And so at the Shark Lab, you guys are working with the government, the lifeguard, trying to keep our beaches safe, trying to help our tourism. So what kind of goals do you guys have for the next year?
Well, we received funding from the state to really help keep people safe. So it was to figure out why sharks are using the beach, learn more about them, and help educate the public so people can share the ocean with sharks. So part of that has required us to look a little deeper than just studying sharks. So for example, I've teamed up with an economist. One of the things we want to understand is if there are white sharks off beaches and you have to close the beach, what is the cost to the local economy for that?
Yeah, I'm sure it's high.
Well, that's one of the things we're trying to look at. And we know that beach closures do impact local economies. Right. Back of the envelope estimates, you close a small beach, that's $50,000 a day. You close a big beach.
Oh my gosh.
That could be $250,000 a day.
Wow. Oh my God, that's a lot.
So we do know that sharks are important for our local economies. And if we can educate people that going in the water, just because there's sharks there, shouldn't prevent you from going in the water, your probability of being bitten is incredibly low, then why close beaches if you don't have to? So this is where we work with lifeguards.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And we share a lot of the things we're finding with them so that they can make better decisions on when you really need to close a beach or not.
Oh, so the lifeguards are in charge of that too?
Yeah, they're actually our research partners.
Oh, okay.
So we work with all ocean lifeguards in California.
Okay.
And they help us. In fact, we help them. We provide them with information about what sharks are doing and help them interpret that information.
Nice.
But they ultimately make the decisions on what they should do to keep people safe.
Okay, I see. Got it. Okay, that's great. You guys are doing amazing things, Dr. Lowe. And you've been on Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, National Geographic, a lot of marine biology publications. And, you know, what do you want people to really know about sharks? Like something that they don't really hear, like in TV or, you know, on those shows or anything else?
Okay, here's my sales pitch. So actually, sharks are really important for the environment. They help keep our oceans clean and healthy. In fact, having sharks in our environments means that the ocean is getting healthier, which means California is doing something right. White sharks couldn't come back unless we had improved the water quality, unless we've done a better job at managing our fisheries. They could not recover like they have. So in many ways, they're the canary in our coal mine. They're telling us something about the health of our ocean. In addition, they help keep our seals and marine mammal populations healthy. So they're taking out the sick and the injured, which helps keep those populations the way we want them. So we've worked hard to bring back many of these things to keep our ocean off California healthy because it's a billion-dollar industry. So these are all, I think, important indicators that sharks are part of the health of our ocean. We need them. And they're
That's
also
amazing.
Important to our economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need sharks to help the California economy. Exactly. And what's your website? Like, how can people contact you with questions about sharks or anything?
It's so easy. All you have to do is Google CSULB Shark Lab.
All right. There it is, everybody. The Shark Lab.
That's it. Shark Week's over. Oh, we got to have them come back again here. We got to do more Shark Weeks here.
Yeah,
I want to thank you for all the work you do. I don't know why we're fascinated with sharks. Maybe it's the movies. Maybe it's the TV series. But they seem so menacing. They look so otherworldly and scary. And yet they're actually a natural part of the environment here and really do more help than they do harm, it sounds like, by far.
They certainly do, and they're going to get the PR makeover that they deserve.
Okay, starting here. Great. Thank you for joining us here. Well, there you have it. Another reason to tune in each and every time to The Real World right here on Orange County's only real radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Station.